welcome to Tourism Media Mayhem, the podcast attempting to tame the wild stallion that is media buying for destinations.
Nice.
That was awful.
I liked it.
I'm Josh.
And I'm Sasha.
And we're two media buyers, both in digital and traditional media, and we like to fight over what's best.
It's our favorite thing.
Yeah. So today, we have a guest, so you don't have to just sit and listen to us talk for half an hour.
Yay.
Let's introduce him. Tim, you there?
Hey, guys.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Thank you. Happy Monday.
Is it Monday? It doesn't even feel like it anymore.
It's Monday.
It's Monday.
Tim's already keeping us on track.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tim.
I appreciate that.
Somebody's got to do it.
Somebody's got to.
So who are you, Tim?
So my name's Tim Johnston. I live in Brooklyn, New York, and I work for a company called Dynadmic.
What kind of a name is that?
Dynadmic?
Dynadmic.
Well, to be fair, we're a French-based company, so I think when they started to name it, I don't know if something got lost in translation, but it's a tongue twister, all right.
And it is.
Ultra punny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dynadmic.
Nice. What is Dynadmic?
Apart from having a funky name, we are a digital ad network. And you might be asking yourself, what the heck does that mean? We help agencies and advertisers kind of plan and place their digital placements.
So whether it be, okay.
Yep. So we take their video ads and we figure out kind of the most efficient and effective places to serve those ads to viewers.
Okay. So I know, Tim, you and I've worked together on a couple of projects and we've talked a lot over the last year or so. And when I think of Dynadmic, I'm always thinking about video, like you just mentioned, and I'm also thinking about contextual targeting. But first, why has Dynadmic chosen to zoom in on video?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we've been in this space for a while, coming up on 10 years, which is pretty exciting. And I think in the very get-go, when they started to create the technology itself, it worked so well for video content as opposed to like a standard display unit. And so what we do now is we pre-analyze the audio track within a video that a viewer is about to watch, right? So if you're online on Travel and Leisure, about to watch a video talking about the top 2021 family travel destinations, our technology will pre-analyze the content or the audio track within the video that you're about to watch and pick out kind of the relevant keywords and the phrases, and then align one of our travel tourism ads with that content in real time. So the idea there is to create a seamless transition between your advertiser's ad and the content the viewer initially set out to watch.
That's pretty cool. So expand on that a bit more. Like, what type of placements are we talking about typically?
So we're talking about those 15 and 30 second spots that's called digital pre-roll. That's kind of the primary placement that we leverage. And then we also do a lot of work with YouTube and connected TV.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
CTV. So we just launched like, that's actually great timing. We launched a connected TV kind of audio recognition technology 2 weeks ago. So we're analyzing not only the content the viewer is about to watch, but also all the data behind the show and or the channel they're about to consume.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So kind of a fun thing to add on where we're going past just kind of the generic who your audience is. If we know your demos 25 to 54, we're more interested in the content they're about to consume versus like who they are or what they've been doing online in the past.
That makes sense. So I'm trying to think here. Can you help us through? I know you and I are in this space, and Sasha kind of is. She pretends like she is.
Oh, please. Here we go.
The tough love.
Is it love?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Talk about why contextual advertising is important right now. Like, I know why. Yeah. I think it's important, but mm-hmm. Give us your take.
Well, right now, a ton of what we call user data is starting to disappear, right? So the way that we go about tracking viewers is becoming less and less. So what we have is a completely cookieless solution that's kind of coming into play. Where again, we're more interested in what content a viewer is about to consume versus who they are, what they've done online in the past, right? So on average, a viewer's interest will change between like 8 to 32 times a day. When you wake up in the morning, maybe you're thinking about what you're going to make for breakfast, maybe a quick workout before heading to the office, or you know, the grocery shopping that you need to do later on that day. Mm-hmm. Over the course of the day, as your interests are changing, maybe you know, during your lunch hour or maybe in the afternoon when everybody starts to space out, you start to think of like, oh, it'd be fun to go on a quick little trip with my fiance, my wife, my girlfriend, my partner, whoever it may be. When that viewer is online and they're consuming content, talking about travel, talking about tourism, talking about summer activities or top lake towns in the US, that's when we want to capture that viewer with one of our travel and tourism ads. It's based off what they're interested in at that very moment. Again, creating that seamless transition between the content they initially set out to watch and what they're interested in at that point in time.
No, that makes a lot of sense. I know right now it's especially important, especially as a lot of the targeting techniques us marketers like myself have used over the last few years are starting to go away. Like you mentioned, cookieless is definitely important. But you guys were doing this before the threat to third-party cookies really mm-hmm. started to emerge, and you were doing it before, in the midst of all this other stuff. Was contextual, in my mind, contextual wasn't all that hot until really recently, but tell me a bit about why that was the approach early on. And I mean, obviously it's hopefully paying off for you now.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, we've been in this space for about 10 years now. So definitely found our kind of groove. And I think a lot of the advertisers and agencies that we work with in travel and tourism like to do more than just kind of the status quo, right? Like they know, everybody knows who they think their ideal target audience is. But to target viewers based off of what they're interested in real time, in addition to the content that they're consuming, just complements campaigns extremely well, I think. And that's kind of where we found our niche and where we found the most success for most of our campaigns.
That's cool. So, Sasha, I mean, from someone who's not in the digital day-to-day, is this tracking with you? Are there clarifying questions we should help our audience think through while they're talking about this?
I think what interests me the most is just the connected TV component. I think that's really cool, really awesome. As you were talking about that, I was just curious how you gather the context that person is interested in tourism before serving the ad. And it might get a little bit granular. Maybe it's third-party data. But does that question make sense? Just how do we know who's going to be primed to be interested in that?
For sure. And so there's like two different strategies there, Sasha. On one end, we use a combination of first and third-party data that's kind of moving away from cookies, but more so based off user IDs. So although cookies are starting to disappear, mm-hmm. there's a number of other different kind of targeting strategies that we can leverage and or recommend. So one is that first and third-party data, right? So if you guys know you're looking to target the demo of male, female between the ages of 25 to 54 with a household income of 150K plus, we can leverage data segments to hone in on that audience for connected TV and OTT placements.
Awesome.
The other option number two, is to leverage some more of that kind of contextual targeting, right? So if we know that we're looking to reach an audience that is more so interested in the outdoor channel, Nat Geo, maybe even the cooking channel, or let's say they're really interested in sports, what we'll do is we'll create kind of a channel list that's relevant for that audience and then only serve ads to that specific demographic based off of what we kind of know their common interests are.
Yeah, that's very cool. So follow-up question to connected TV. So what kind of partnerships do you guys have with certain streaming platforms? Like who do you partner with and where do those ads run? Like, where can you apply contextual targeting when it comes to the OTT space? Because there are so many different vendors and platforms to stream TV on, and a lot of different there's just a lot of different options, I guess, to purchase OTT. So where do you guys live when it comes to that?
Great question. So we work with pretty much everybody outside of Hulu. So we work with Apple TV, Sling TV, Amazon Fire TV. And within that, we have access to over 650 different channels. Before we launch any campaign, we send over like a full app and or channel list for an advertiser to approve. I think one of the biggest issues right now with connected TV and OTT, Sasha, is everybody has access to the inventory, but it's how it's being sold where I think there's a big gap in terms of transparency. So before even hitting go, we like to let you guys know or give you at least an idea of where those ads could potentially be served. What our team did, our tech team has been working on this for the past 2 years, was they went through and they either analyzed or manually analyzed the description of every single connected TV channel that we have access to. So the description of the show, the description of the movie, the actors and actresses, every single detail that pertains to the show or the channel has been pre-analyzed by our team and or our technology. And so that's kind of where the contextual targeting lives. Does that kind of answer your question?
It sure does. That's awesome. I think it sounds like your team has been really thorough with selecting what streaming platforms you actually appear on, which is something you put, you know, you nailed it on the head that that's just something to watch with OTT, that a lot of people
yeah.
see OTT, but you don't know for necessarily sure. sometimes where your ad's running and if it's in prime, you know, platforms. And so no, that sounds great that you guys are a little bit more thorough with that process and really transparent up front.
Yeah. I think another good talking point too, is people are starting to vet different partners, is like ensuring that in addition to their own verification process, they maybe work with a third party like Integral Ad Science, Moat, Double Verify, or when it comes to connected TV and OTT, Pixelite. I think over the course of the past couple of years, a big industry trend has just been fraudulent activity. And so something that we've been doing is making sure that we have numerous partners involved through that vetting process to make sure all the impressions that we do serve are actually human verified traffic, right? Not fake impressions or fake bots.
Yeah. Awesome. Very important.
Yeah, that's super important.
Yeah.
So we've talked about the importance of contextual targeting and kind of how you go about that. And I'm a true believer, especially as I've seen some of the results from some of the campaigns we've run through Dynamic. Oh, that name.
The tongue twister. Yeah.
And so I know the performance we've seen is typically above the benchmarks that I usually look for when I'm buying on YouTube or if I'm buying OTT and CTV programmatically when Sasha gives me the budget to do it. But when she doesn't fight me for it, when I win the
when
fight.
Is that? When is that, Josh? When do I not fight you?
All the time. Anyway, no. Talk about...
No, I said, when do I not fight you?
Never. It's when you're feeling lazy. You okay. Have your lazy days.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Here, Josh, have this.
So moral of the story is, tell me a bit about like what kind of benchmarks you're looking for as far as performance data comes to the campaigns that you run.
Definitely. So we focus on really two primary KPIs. And then there's an additional kind of added value bonus that I can walk you guys through that we do with a number of our different advertisers and agencies. So
we always love added value.
Yeah. Our two primary KPIs are usually a video through rate and a click-through rate. So measuring how many people are actually watching the ad in full or to its completion, in addition to those that are clicking, expressing interest, and being redirected to the website where they can learn more. I'm a huge proponent of kind of building an equilibrium between those two KPIs. So displaying some high quality branding and awareness, but also kind of driving some of that qualified site traffic where viewers can learn more. With a lot of our travel and tourism clients, we'll also include a brand lift study, which helps kind of measure the overall lift following the campaign. So kind of ad recognition, understanding whether or not viewers have seen the ad or have expressed interest in maybe visiting that place or learning more about visiting that place, will go a long way for some of our travel tourism clients when, you know, those two primary KPIs just aren't enough to measure it.
Sure. Yeah, I know something that Sasha and I both run into on a regular basis is proving the value of the buys that we're doing. And Sasha especially struggles with it.
Shots fired, Josh.
It's just because it's all awareness. There's
No, yeah. We just drive leads to your stuff, which is why you can prove results.
Well, someone's got to do it.
But without us, you may not have as many.
Right?
Yeah.
Thank you, Tim. Back me up, Tim.
I feel like I'm caught in the middle right now. I'm being pulled in either direction. It's like, I love branding and awareness, but I also have to prove like what we're doing is working.
Yeah, exactly.
So I can totally relate to both parties involved.
Well, okay, so that's a good point. When you're talking to potential clients or agencies about how this product set works, where do you see it fitting in like a full funnel approach?
For sure. What we do and what we do extremely well here at Dynamic is like high impact branding and awareness campaigns. Video advertising in and of itself is a branding and awareness tool, and I don't see that changing over the course of the next 25 years. I think it's a high impact branding and awareness play where you're capturing a viewer's interest and then in hopes of kind of retargeting them and pushing them further down the funnel over the course of the campaign's duration. But Dynamic in and of itself, I'd say you guys can think of as kind of like a upper to mid funnel tactic where we help with some of those, again, high quality branding and awareness plays.
Cool. Nice. Yeah, that kind of makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. I think that's where my head would put it, I think.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about specific tourism use cases. So what, as far as the, you know, destination clients or even attraction or hotel clients that you might have worked with, what works and what doesn't work?
Yeah, absolutely. So what we always recommend, I mean, I think I alluded to this earlier, but we have three different primary tactics that we can leverage here at Dynamic. We have a digital network that consists of over 1,000 relevant travel and tourism publishers. We have a YouTube play, and then we also have connected TV and OTT. We usually recommend kind of doing a combination of those three so that you kind of round out the campaign parameters well and don't miss an ideal or a prevalent target audience. And so we'll usually allocate a portion, a majority of the budget towards the digital network where we see that high quality branding and awareness, but the most amount of clicks. We'll usually do a portion of the budget towards YouTube, really a branding and awareness play there. So we can target on desktop, mobile, tablet, and a YouTube connected TV. Which can be a fun play, and then also connected TV and OTT, which is really that kind of larger scale branding and awareness play of that, you know, large TV screen in a living room and a game room, getting multiple different eye sets on the TV itself. The contextual targeting works best on the digital network and YouTube, which is really why I recommend allocating a majority of the budget towards there. And then for the connected TV, it's nice to kind of round it out with some of those data segments to hone in on the right age, household income, travel tourism interest.
I have a question, and if it's stupid, Julie can cut it out.
Sure.
My mind hopped to when you are doing contextual targeting, as far as when you offer reporting after the campaign is over, are you offering to the destination information about who's actually receiving those ads? Are you sending them like name and age, not name, but like age and any type of like demographic or psychographic information? And I ask that because I'm wondering if destinations are surprised with who is actually the audience when it comes to contextual targeting versus the audience they had in their mind.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, it makes total sense, Sasha. And it's a great question. And I ran into this not too long ago with the campaign that I was running who we had a portion of the budget allocated towards those data segments and a portion of the budget mm-hmm. towards the contextual targeting, right? And mm-hmm. sometimes when you do contextual targeting, you're not necessarily focused on the demographic as much as you are what that viewer is interested
right.
in. And so we found like we were targeting kind of a 25 to 34 year old demographic for this group. But on the back end of the campaign, we were getting a ton of traffic from the 50 to 64 year old demographic. And so for me, it was like, you know, I need to go back and kind of walk this advertiser through what was happening. And I think it was both eye-opening for them throughout the campaign's duration to realize, like, maybe our audience isn't who we thought it was.
Yeah.
And so it's just a, it was a very interesting conclusion that we came to. You know, we allocated budget towards the appropriate demographic, but we also had this contextual piece going on. And it was, like, you know, reaching this completely different group that would have been an otherwise untapped audience if we hadn't allocated a portion of the budget towards that contextual strategy.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's so important and informative for destinations to find out almost via, you know, research, what, who is actually their audience. And it might not be who they thought once they see who's viewing, you know, through the contextual targeting. So that's really interesting. I think that is something to explore if you're a destination and you're maybe not sure who your target audience is, that this could be one way that you could help find out who is taking action and who is interested on those ads.
Yeah, I think a good bonus too, just to throw in there, is like those added value brand lift studies, right? So that takes it even further than what we do, and they collect a ton of user data and profiles over the course of the campaign based off the impressions that we've served to kind of go even further, which is just, again, I think if you don't know who your audience is or you think you have an idea, it's pretty easy to run a campaign to figure out who it is. And then from there, build strategies based off that for the upcoming travel and tourism seasons.
Yeah, which is very important to destinations. Yeah. And I think sometimes to develop a target persona can cost a lot of money, right? Mm-hmm. And for that preliminary research, like, do you guys have a minimum sort of engagement that's required, or where do you fall when it comes to, like, if you were to compare to, you know, a destination going out and, like, hiring for all this research and establishing personas? I would imagine it's probably cheaper to be able to run it through you guys, and then they also get those ad placements, right?
Yeah, for sure. And we, what we do too at Dynamic is a little different from just like taking your ads and running with them. We have a full strategy team in-house who will take a campaign brief and do some market research and do some audience analysis to help you guys kind of build out not only who your audience is, but the most efficient and effective ways to reach those audiences based off of campaigns that we've run in the past.
Nice. Awesome. Cool. Sorry, I maybe steered it another direction, but I thought that was really good. Interesting.
For sure.
Did that client you were talking about, Tim, did they act on that information? Did they do anything differently afterwards?
They did. So then we took a step back and we totally kind of recreated and repurposed some of the different creatives that resonated well with one audience group versus the other. Then we kind of broke the budget out, as opposed to having a significant budget going towards that younger demographic. We kind of rebalanced it to target both with kind of an equal balance.
That's a beautiful thing. That's cool. Okay, so as far as, I like to ask the, like, what to not do. Like, what is the way to screw this up? Like, is it, how would you protect someone from making a mistake in doing one of these buys? Obviously, you guys will help because you're there, but.
You know. Right. I think that's such a good question. From my learnings, I mean, last year was super weird with COVID, and unfortunately it's just a tough year for everybody in this industry. But over the course of the past 5 years, I think one of my biggest learnings, or I guess even takeaways, would be to not think that you know too much about who it is that you're looking to reach. What our technology does and does really well is it finds viewers based off what they're interested in at that very moment. And I think we can learn more from the technology finding those viewers than kind of setting up a campaign like it's stuck in stone. With digital, you can be so fluid with your tactics and your targeting. And if something's not working, you can change it before it's too late. So I think going in with kind of more of an open mind and learning as we go versus saying, this is what we know and this is what we're going to do. Kind of being on the same page of adjusting accordingly and kind of being more fluid with our targeting tactics than setting things up in stone.
No, that makes sense. So if I had to ask you a tough question, give me a percentage. How many marketers out there have made really bad buys off of bad information that they thought they knew was good? You're supposed to just know what every marketer is thinking.
That's broad, Josh.
Oh my gosh. Let me throw that back. I mean, what do you guys think? You guys are the ones in the hot seat.
I would straight up everyone. Say probably everyone. I mean,
I think everybody is everybody's made a mistake. Everybody thinks they know what they don't know.
Yeah, and through data, you realize it might be what you're thinking might not be correct, right? So
yeah,
there's a learning curve there. It's a little bit of a learning curve there.
Well, and for us on our back end, we're like, okay, this isn't working. Like, we need to talk to the client, you know, as soon as possible to make sure that we find a way to make this work. And I think, I mean, we all make mistakes, but I think what marketers do and do really well is just kind of communicate when something's not working as we had planned versus setting and forgetting. And that's kind of what we, that's what we look for with, like, when we're partnering with different agencies or even advertisers, is like, who can we work with to create a success story? Because every success story that we create, it kind of helps us build who we are and what makes us unique within this space. So I think, again, that comes back to what I had said earlier about just being open-minded and kind of working hand in hand with your team to, at the end of the day, get the most efficient and effective campaign that you can.
Cool.
Yeah, great tip.
So I like to get a little sneaky at times with some of my marketing. And I think oftentimes, I don't think this is done a lot in B2B and in e-commerce, but I don't know how much is really done in tourism. And I think there's an opportunity to do a little, what I would call conquesting, taking advantage of information you know about your competition and using that against them, whether it's finding ways to geo-target visitors who are in their destination and encourage them to come to your destination while they're in the area or whatever. Is there any unique way to do some almost like content hijacking?
For sure. I think travel tourism is like one of the verticals that absolutely loves competitive conquest targeting. So any and all content that could be talking about like a similar state tourism group or similar outdoor activities, similar destinations, similar hotels, similar golf clubs, similar tennis clubs, they freaking love it. And what we do with some of our targeting is like, we can create a keyword targeting strategy based off of their competitors. So anytime their competitors mentioned inside a video, inside editorial content, inside of a review, we're going to hone in on that and serve their ad on top of it. So they're top of mind.
That's so awesome.
That's cool. I was wondering where you were going with sneaky.
Sneaky. Me too.
I was going to let it play out.
I like to get creepy with my marketing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good question. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So one more like technical question. And then, well, if Sasha has follow-ups, we've got more of a fun question. So yeah, the final technical question, and I know this is something that comes up a lot when I'm talking to clients about OTT placements or video buys or even display buys, like, how safe is this for brands, and how do you as a company protect brand safety?
For sure. That's, I think, one of the biggest questions that we get asked on kind of a day-to-day, week-to-week basis. And it's probably one of our strongest, let's say, qualities or capabilities is our proprietary brand safety tool. So earlier in our podcast, we talked about the technology being able to analyze the audio track within a video a viewer is about to watch. And as we're analyzing for those relevant keywords or maybe those competitors, we're also scanning it for brand safety. And so that goes on four different levels. Before serving an advertiser's ad, we check the page and the URL to make sure that it's a relevant placement on a medium and large player only. We then check the sound and the speech within the video, listening for gunshots, car crashes, plane crashes, anything that could be harmful for a brand. We immediately deem not brand safe and remove that from the inventory. Then we analyze the content on the page, and this gets all the way down to user-generated comments on YouTube. So again, making sure wherever we're serving our advertisers' ads or within a 100% brand safe atmosphere. So that kind of answers your question at a high level. We can also, as we're able to hyper-target those specific keywords and phrases, we can also block any and all content that an advertiser does not want to be associated with. So maybe it is COVID-19. Maybe it's a political figure. Maybe it's Mickey Mouse. Whatever it is, we can also block any and all content they don't want to be associated with.
Or let's say if you're Jurassic World and a whole bunch of people just got eaten at your park, you could avoid serving ads on videos about that.
Exactly.
You love Jurassic Park. It's going to make its way into every episode.
Oh, no.
No, that's awesome, though. I think peace of mind. We do get the safety question a lot. And I think that would set my mind at ease that things are safe.
Yeah for sure.
Cool. Yeah.
Okay. So I'll ask you this next question. This is like hypothetical. We need your help building a campaign. Okay?
Yep.
So we have this destination that we've kind of created out of thin air for our podcast. We're calling it Texaho.
Why, you may ask? Because it pairs Texas and Idaho together.
We don't need to describe it.
Josh is from Texas and I'm from Idaho. Yeah.
Anyway.
Texaho.
Texaho.
What's its slogan? What's the slogan of Texaho?
We do need to work on that.
Yeah. Good question.
You guys need to figure that out.
We're just staring at each other.
Figure that out.
Yeah, yeah, we definitely need to figure that out.
Texaho.
I mean, we just introduced it last episode, so it's still got some growing to do.
Oh, really? I thought the first episode.
Oh, maybe. I don't know.
Starting from the start.
Okay. Anyway, so we need to run a campaign. Need to build some of that brand awareness that we were talking about earlier. A little information about Texaho for you. Currently, it exists in the middle of, currently, as if it'll move. it exists in the middle of the Pacific Ocean.
Mm-hmm. Island.
It's about the size of Australia. So you could either call it an island or a continent. Yeah. Our key demographics are families, because, you know, you have to go after families and build that generational lifetime affinity for. But then we also have NASCAR loving hippies.
Oh, baby. Hipsters.
Yeah.
I like
NASCAR loving hipsters.
Hipsters.
Wow.
Very, very niche group of people there.
Yeah. There's some outdoor adventure, some sports.
Yep. Nice.
Lots of good craft beer, of course, because you can't have a destination without craft beer. budget's no problem. We can spend whatever we need to spend because this is mythical money here. What would you, knowing that, how would you get us started with a campaign? What would you recommend strategy-wise?
Yeah, so what we would do is we kind of break out the two primary audiences into two different groups, right? So we have the NASCAR-loving hipsters, there's adventurous families who love kind of the outdoor activities, et cetera. And what our team will do is we'll build out kind of a customized keyword targeting approach for each of these two different audiences. One who absolutely loves NASCAR, but is kind of hipster on the side. So any and all content talking about NASCAR, talking about different NASCAR drivers, talking about upcoming NASCAR races, et cetera, is a place where we're going to kind of hone in on what those interests are. Then we're going to kind of focus on the adventurous families, right? Any and all content talking about visiting Texaho, maybe things to do in Texaho, maybe resorts in Texaho, family-friendly activities in Texaho. Any and all content talking about those outdoor adventures, outdoor activities, family-friendly activities is where we're really going to hone in on this ideal target audience to help increase that overall brand awareness of Texaho.
Okay. Cool. Sasha and I, we're media buyers. We're not creative. What kind of content? What?
Speak for yourself.
What kind of content should these videos? You're not creative, Sasha.
I am. I came up with Texaho.
Hey. Hats off. Hats off for the creation of Texaho.
It's all nice.
Yeah. I actually can't. Sorry, go ahead.
I'll be very transparent with you guys too. I'm not a creative mind, but speaking for a lot of our travel and tourism clients, they highlight what their location consists of and what's different from theirs as opposed to anybody else's. And for Texaho, I think they have some beautiful glittering coasts. We'll highlight that. Maybe some majestic mountains. We'll look at those as well. That delicious craft beer and those breweries. I mean, let's show people what they want to see. And that's, again, those beautiful shots of what it is and what they have to offer.
Cool. Okay. I realized there was another question I meant to ask you earlier, but do you have any good case studies, Tim, about how destinations have used Dynamic and used it well?
Definitely. We have some really nice kind of industry overviews and case studies of some of the different destinations that we've worked with. And those really kind of give you a high level overview of, you know, where it was that we're targeting. For example, Disney World, we did a campaign for Ski Idaho, Sasha.
Nice.
Florida Keys, KLM, Louisiana Tourism, Visit Philly, NH Tourism, Tourism Quebec, Discovery Long Island. What these case studies kind of break out is the target audience that we were looking to reach, the categories that we target, that's kind of the broader umbrella approach, then the top performing keywords, and those are the keywords that were being spoken inside the videos those viewers were consuming.
Okay. So maybe we could get you to send us the link for that and we can include that with the show notes. That would be cool.
Definitely. We can send you guys over kind of that industry overview. It's pretty short, simple, and sweet. And then maybe that dynamic deck that gives you some kind of visual representations of what it would look like when we're reaching different audiences.
Very cool. Sasha, do you have any final questions?
I have one last question. And again, we can cut it if we need to. But Tim, I'm just curious about CPM for your connected TV. Like, how does that compare to other OTT partnerships and even Hulu? As far as just how does price compare?
For sure. So it definitely ranges depending on the geo that we're targeting and the campaign's duration, Sasha, but it is usually between like $25 to $35. So Hulu, love them to death, but they're pretty damn expensive and have some big budget minimums. You also have a pretty significant frequency because there aren't a ton of different ads that are running on Hulu. Which can at times be a little intrusive for the audience itself. Because we partner with everybody outside of Hulu, which is between 80 to 85% of the connected TV and OTT inventory, we're able to provide some pretty competitive rates without budget minimums. So we can A, work off your assigned budget, or B, help you guys recommend budgets to get a big impact on the campaign.
Cool. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty competitive.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Tim, thinking about our audience here and people who work in destination and tourism marketing, any final thoughts you'd like to share with them?
Sure.
We call it a day.
I think just kind of bringing back to the high level campaign overview of not putting all your eggs into one basket, right? And I think kind of diversifying what it is that you're buying and who it is that you're buying with to kind of round up the campaign itself. And then as you do so, you're able to A-B test different strategies, optimize accordingly, which gives you a lot of room to not only grow, but also kind of learn what works and what doesn't work. And I think those findings are some of the most important pieces after a first initial test campaign that you can then take and apply to any and all campaigns moving forward. That's definitely one of my favorite parts about digital advertising itself, is that you're constantly learning and constantly optimizing accordingly. So it's never set in stone. With that gives you and the team a lot of room to adjust accordingly to, again, create that efficient and effective digital campaign.
Absolutely. I think I just heard you say that digital is better than traditional. Is that what I heard?
There's a rumor going around.
Of course.
Sasha's like, get this guy out of here.
No.
I think we just hit our time limit.
we're gonna kick Josh off and keep you, Tim.
Okay.
Well, Tim, it was great having you. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, guys.
Next time on the Tourism Media Mayhem podcast, we're going to be talking about a whole bunch of different things. It's going to be kind of a smattering of topics.
Yes.
Get excited.
Very excited. Kind of a game, shall we say?
All right. Have a good week,
okay,
everybody.
Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, guys.